Hey, welcome to the Maroon PR Podcast. Spin is a four-letter word. We like to start our pod by explaining why we named it this way. Well, if you're a PR pro and you hear the word spin or spin doctor, we hate it. And we don't like it because it kind of implies that you're lying or you're being dishonest or you're stretching the truth. What we do is communicate. What we do is help our clients message and help them tell stories. So when you hear the word spin, it makes our skin crawl, and hence the name of the podcast. And on our podcast, we're going to be diving into all things public relations, media. We're going to have honest and open conversations. We discuss the good and the bad. And we're going to be talking to some of the most interesting people around, from fellow PR pros to journalists and those that are actually under the spotlight and being interviewed. So our goal is to have this honest, informative conversations. We hope you enjoy it. And if you like what you hear, please, subscribe, follow us on social media, and give us your honest feedback. We want to get better as well. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening, and welcome to the first ever Spin is a Four-Letter Word Maroon PR Podcast. When we launched this thing, we wanted to start off with a bang, and we thought, who better than Hall of Famer and our friend and longtime client, Cal Ripken Jr. And I was thrilled that Cal agreed to be our guest, and we'll talk to him in a couple of moments. I'll just give everybody who's listening a little bit of background. Cal and I have been working together for 26 years now. a little sad to say that out loud. It means we're getting old. But I came to Baltimore in 1995 to be the Orioles PR director, and that was the year he broke the record, as we all know. And so we were thrust together. We hit it off really well, worked together all that amazing season, and next 2 years the Orioles went to the playoffs. And then I worked for him for 6 years and helped him start his foundation, helped him get the business launched, and helped him through the final couple of years of his career, and did the farewell tour and all that good stuff, worked with the Orioles on that. And then when I decided to start my business 15 years ago, start Maroon PR, I went and told him because I was working for him at the time. And he said, great, I'll be your first client. I said, well, this is really awesome. And so for the last 15 years, he's been a client and obviously a friend. And I think what you'll hear is Cal has some really terrific insights on media today as opposed to back when he played, the advent of social media and what it would have been like in his time versus now, and how he's jumped into social media a little bit as well. And then just the fan interaction, how he's developed his brand. He's one of the most thoughtful and analytical folks I've ever been around, athlete or not. And I think you'll enjoy it. Let's jump right into it. We're here with Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr., longtime friend, longtime Maroon PR client. Cal, thanks for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
I appreciate it. Some of the things I want to touch on today are things that you and I have talked about over the years. First and foremost, I mean, this year marks 20 years since your retirement from baseball, which is amazing in a lot of ways. Just for you, does it feel like it's been that long, or does it feel like it's yesterday, and how'd that happen?
I guess it depends upon the day. Some days it feels like I'm still playing baseball and you're part of that schedule because that's what you did for your whole life. And other times it feels like it was another lifetime ago. You get busy doing different things. You know, even if you saved your money really well after baseball, which a lot of people can do nowadays, especially, and you don't have to work, everybody wants to do something. So I find myself constantly wanting to move forward, not sit back and think about what was and what is going to be going forward. And so I think whatever mode I'm in, if I'm really thinking about doing something, pushing something forward, or I'm busy, I get drawn in, at that moment. But other times you're sitting around on your rocking chair, and I know you remember many times when people would ask me, how do you want to be remembered from baseball, that sort of thing. And I'd always say, well, now's not the time to really think about that, or how do you want to be remembered? There'll be a day when I sit in the rocking chair and start to think about it. Those days in the rocking chair have me reflecting on, times that were really great. And so those times when I'm sitting in the rocking chair, it feels like, it's just an extension of who you were as a baseball player.
It's amazing to me too, because I think about when that was. It was October of 2001, and about a month after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And you think about how the world overall has changed since that time, in such dramatic ways, the way we live, the way we operate, all that stuff. More pertaining to this podcast and the business in which we're discussing, you know, boy, has the media changed. You know, I was curious, like, when you broke the record and when you played, there was not social media to contend with. And you and I have discussed this a little bit, too. I mean, are you happy that that wasn't a factor? What do you think that would have been like and would have changed it?
Yeah, I would have adapted to whatever the environment was, as young people are doing right now. My son is involved in professional baseball. He's trying to make it. You know, he might be with the AAA Orioles this year. That seems to be the next platform from him. And so he deals with all those things that I wonder right now, thinking, man, social media and everybody's got an opinion. It's out there immediately. And if you have a team meeting, somebody can put the team meeting out online really quickly. Is anything private? You know, you start to think in those regards. But I will tell you, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago when I came to the big leagues and I made my debut after the strike was over in 81. And when I start to think about what was going on around 81 or 82 was my first full year in the big leagues, you start to think, okay, when you stayed in a hotel, they just had, you know, three stations, three TV stations, 2, 11, and 13, ABC, NBC, CBS, and you had a U station that you could try to get something in on.
Right.
So again, when you're in the hotel room, you're watching soap operas because that's all that's on before you go to the ballpark. There was no cell phones. You know, I remember the traveling secretary, you know, had to make all his calls and, before he goes to the airport, but he didn't have the ability to make a call on the way. And then sometimes we couldn't figure out which part of the airport to get into, you know, when you're flying on a charter plane. And you start to think people looked at baseball as a sport, not really as this big form of entertainment that it's become now. And so players, I believe, think of themselves as entertainers now because of the environment in which they're in, because they care about what they do off the field, what they do on the field. You know, in my time, we were very lucky that the focus was on the field. And even how cameras shot the game, they didn't shoot the dugout. You weren't allowed to shoot your locker when you're inside. Everything was, there was a much more cognitive view on protecting privacy. There were certain rules that you couldn't violate, you know, but now it doesn't seem like there's any rules.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that I'd be able to adapt to it, but I don't think I would have liked it. You know, I'm someone that you want to give all you can when you come to the ballpark. You're a baseball player. It is a public life because you're doing things on TV. People are buying tickets to come watch you play. And I always felt that there was a responsibility to that. But I also am someone that needed to recharge by, you know, having your privacy or going back to the hotel room and recharging so you could do the same thing again the next day. So I don't think I would have liked playing in this environment.
Yeah, I know as a PR person with a team, I can't imagine the challenges you face today, because it could be 2 a.m. and you get a call about one of the athletes tweeting something or something going down on a 24-hour cable news network, and it's never ending. I mean, I thought it was never ending then. I like to reflect on 21-31, which was the coolest night ever. And, you know, when that all went down, imagine in today's universe with Twitter and, you know, instant postings and Instagram. In a way, I think it'd be kind of cool because I think it'd break the internet that night. In another way, now, every time something happens, you see people looking at their phone to capture it, not looking at the event. And I sound like an old fart, but that drives me a little crazy. And I think it's not, it loses some of its appeal. And I like the memory versus the...
Well, it's really interesting how you describe it is how I wanted to remember it through my lens. I didn't need to watch it on TV. I didn't need to go around and ask someone to take a movie camera around in the dugout. You know, a lot of players did that to capture their own memories. But while you were going through it, you wanted to experience it. And it was really important to me. And even for the longest time, I wouldn't watch the telecast or I wouldn't watch the replay of the game because I had this perfect vision of what happened to me from me.
Right.
And, you know, you're very You're very astute, I think, because I think about those things when you watch the young generation or Ryan. Ryan is not so much, my son Ryan is not so much into social media. He has a little bit more private, and maybe he grew up that way, you know, and so he feels that way. But many other people want to put out or publish everything that they do, you know, in a way, and it doesn't seem like they're taking a moment to really enjoy it themselves. You know, they're thinking the way that you just said is, let me record this, let me capture this, as opposed to just experiencing it. And I wonder how would have 2131 rolled out. You know, there were certain timetables or certain controls that we put on that allowed me to be a baseball player and enjoy the fans and enjoy what you're supposed to be doing. So we had to control the media in some senses. In social media now, it seems like there is no control. As you just said, it could be at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, somebody could be upset after the game and then decide to tweet something that offends the other team. And, you know, it affects all kinds of things that happen. It just seems like the control is gone. You know, the word can get out at any time, at any moment. And that does take away your opportunity to cool down, your opportunity to really use time to help you control your own situation. But the media, the way it was before, you could build in like we did. Yeah. You know, we had a press conference. We went in the first day of the city, essentially to buy us two other days. If we had a three-game series, we came in early, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, ask me anything you want. Let's get all this stuff out. Let's contain it. Let's give everyone an opportunity. And then I can just be a baseball player for the rest of the time. And so we were able to control that, but I don't know how those controls, you know, would work nowadays.
Yeah, I think, you know, like we said, the upside is that it's much more global. Everybody's kind of following it, all that good stuff. The downside is that it's the privacy lack, the control lacks, and I think people lose that experience as well. You know, you see young people now meeting someone who they might be their sports hero. I saw Tiger Woods meeting a young kid a few weeks ago before the accident, obviously. And, you know, the young person was like so busy filming him meeting Tiger Woods that he almost didn't meet Tiger Woods. And Tiger, right, you know, said, hey, let's talk to each other. So there's upsides to it. I get it. And I understand. I'm involved in it as well. It's a big part of our business. But there's also some loss of, connection, I think, with it as well.
Yeah, it becomes a little more artificial, I think, and the way I think about it is that you're filming yourself. It's almost, there are certain experiences that you say that there are out-of-body experiences, like even 2131, the lap around the ballpark. It felt like I was watching myself do it in some ways. You're running around and it feels artificial. It feels not real. But you can quickly come back into the moment because you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like most things now, social media or even the concept of having followers, you know, you're trying to do things artificially in a sense, right, to have more people interested in who you are. And sometimes the crazier things you do, the more people want to follow you or the more opinions you have, the more people want to follow you. And in the end, you're starting to create what you think are experiences instead of just letting them happen and living those experiences.
Yeah, and you're on Twitter now. I know there's a fan page on Facebook for Cal Ripken that we run for you, but you're on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you check it out and you scroll around a little bit. How's that experience been?
It's fun in many ways. It's a great way to communicate when you want to communicate. Then my question is, my own filter, what do I communicate about my life? You know, what do you share? What don't you share? I love, I've trained my dog in the backyard. And so I was kind of cool. It was kind of cool early on is that as I'm training my dog to run pass plays, you know, essentially you got a ball and you tell him to run to a certain part and turn around, or you give a pump fake and tell him to go long. You know, I'm kind of think, well, that's kind of cool because most people experience going through training their dogs or having little tricks that their dogs do, and it would be an interesting way to share that. And so that kind of thing seems harmless to me, seems like you can relate. And so the question is, what can you relate in, which doesn't sound like you're bragging. It doesn't sound like you say, look at me, but that other people might enjoy. And so I'm learning. That's a little intimidating for me. And sometimes I'll have a drought where I don't do anything. But there's sometimes when things happen that you want to put out a comment or two. But I don't feel the need to actually do it on a daily basis. And maybe I would have more followers if I did. But I'm still getting used to the whole concept.
For sure. And by the way, anyone listening, Nash is the most well-trained dog in the planet. Incredible. Yeah, and Cal, shift gears a little bit. I was curious, too. I think a lot of people, and young athletes specifically, would benefit to hear from you about choices. What I mean by that is you built a brand before it was cliche to build a brand, mm-hmm. and you did it through choices. And, you talk famously about the one when you were very young between hot dogs or underwear and picking the hot dogs and then drove your other choices. But I mean, just talking to maybe young athletes that have some opportunities in front of them and stuff, what would you suggest to them about the choices they make and who they associate with?
Yeah. I mean, a brand, to me was built by a collection of your choices, and really who you are is built by a collection of your choices through life. You're going through a journey in life and you are faced with right or wrong decisions or things that you think are good or not, or do they fit me? And when you make those choices, then you start to produce your own identity. It doesn't have to be what everybody else does. But I think sometimes now the athlete might want the whole kit and caboodle. He wants the endorsements. He wants his political opinions out there. He wants to be an activist in some ways. It's almost like, how do I... you're defining yourself without really defining yourself. You're making those choices to build a brand for the sole purpose of building a brand. And I never thought of it that way. I think the underwear and the hot dog story is worth going back to. Is the first couple, or the milk, so that you could throw milk in there at the same time. As I was making choices, when you had success at the big leagues and people wanted you to endorse certain products, I thought it was kind of interesting and cool. I was honored and flattered that, businesses would come to you. And everybody wants to make a commercial, I think. And I know Jim Palmer was the jockey underwear guy. And he was towards the end of his career, and I was at the start of mine. And I think jockey was looking for someone to roll in behind Palmer. And they considered me. And they made an offer, to come in, and which meant, posing in your underwear and doing all that kind of stuff. And I thought about it for a while, and it was worth a lot more money than the hot dog ad that I was considering, or the milk ad that I was considering. And for a moment, you start to think, okay, the money would be good, but what would that change about me? How would people look at me? Or, do I want to be that? And ultimately, I couldn't stand the thought of posing in my underwear and having my mom see it. So I said no to the... to the well-paying jockey endorsement at the time, and said yes to SK Hot Dogs and yes to MAMA, Mid-Atlantic Milk Marketing Association. So I was milk and hot dogs as opposed to the sex symbol that Jim Palmer was.
But then, those early decisions kind of shaped who you became, not only, as a ball player, but just, as that brand that we talked about. It kind of directed you the rest of the way, didn't it?
Well, you end up standing for something. I mean, yeah. And sometimes different points in your life, you feel more open to doing things than other points, but it's still part of the journey. It's still part of who you are, and you're making those choices. So if I was to give advice to a modern day baseball player, you're a baseball player. So focus on your being a baseball player. That's your first brand that you want to build. You want to be as good as you can and for as long as you can. But there were opportunities along the way that would come in, and I was intellectually curious. I often wondered what I would do after a long career in baseball, and so I wanted to learn. And so some of these opportunities were learning experiences, and so I made choices based on, I'd like to learn about that. I'd like to do that. I like to experience that. But in the end, I could never endorse something that it wasn't me. Because I don't have much hair in my head, the Rogaines and the different hair products were always offered to me. And I couldn't see myself doing that, even though it could have been very lucrative. So in the end, it's you're asking yourself who you are. And by making these choices, you're defining who you are ultimately to everyone.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And the last thing I want to touch on before we let you go is just more about media relations and dealing with the press. I mean, you did a great job of managing that throughout your career. We, for a large part of it, you and I worked together on that. And you had a great way of balancing what was needed and your obligation versus, you know, giving yourself the space. I mean, you know, and I don't, I'm not sure a ton of athletes understand that they have choices they can make in this front as well. I mean, what was your approach from the jump on that? Because you had been in the spotlight from the minute you came to Baltimore and before that, actually.
Well, I mean, I had a pretty good build up because my dad was in professional baseball and he was a coach on the Orioles. And even from the time I started to get scouted, my name, you know, carried some significance. I would laugh because when I got drafted, I was 17. I got drafted in June of 78. I was 17, turning 18 the end of August. And going to Bluefield, West Virginia, I wasn't old enough to drink. the drinking age was 18 at the time. And you figured you could sneak it in. You're a professional baseball player, et cetera. But everybody in the town knew that I was 17. And so they said, well, wait till your 18th birthday. And so on my 18th birthday, I came out, and they all sort of celebrated that. So you did get a buildup from that. But I think it's the way you handle the media is, number one, you got to understand that the media is part of things. But it doesn't mean they have to be 100% part of your every day. There's got to be times when most baseball players, or I would say athletes in general, they run to the mic after they hit the game-winning home run or drive in the run or make a great play in the field, and they want to talk about it. It's easy to do that when all things are good. But after you strike out with the bases loaded or you make an error that costs your team the win, what do you do then? Well, I don't want to talk to the media now. I don't want to talk about that. Get out of here. You know, that's a general attitude. And I always thought you have to be willing to talk about that moment just as much as you're willing to talk about the home run moment. And then once you do that consistently enough, then you're given a little bit of a break. I didn't feel like I was a spokesperson for the Orioles, even though I'd been around a while and people would come to me and they want to know what I thought. I thought the manager's job was to be the spokesperson. In some cases, it's a general manager's job. I mean, you're a teammate and a player. But when there were times when I thought that I needed to be available, I was available. But there were times when after the game was over, I was still upset, and I didn't feel like I needed to be available, and I'd be back in the weight room, you know, trying to be better for the next day. And so in some ways, you just make yourself not available at moments, and you don't create a conflict. But I think that the differentiation is you need to be there in the good and the bad, and then you also need to balance, you know, when those times are. And you can't be iffy about it. If you do make the error, and you're the focus of the game, and you cost yourself a game, you have to explain it. Right. And I always try to make sure that I was available during those moments.
That's great. And tell me a little bit about when, before the streak reached a tipping point where it became like, he's got to do it, and we're so excited about this, there was a time when some in the media were making a name for themselves by being very critical of you playing every day. How did you handle that during those times, and was it more challenging for you personally?
Stop reading the paper.
Yeah.
Again, the evolution of learning and being a baseball player and then being the subject of news every day is that I remember I wanted to read my name in the paper, and I wanted to say, you know, I've arrived, and that's great. And Cal hit a home run. We won the game in the eighth inning. You know, all those things were great and made you feel better about yourself. But then there are sometimes when you're reading the articles and you realize, okay, what's being depicted in the article right now is not even close to what happened in the game. And I was thinking, did the writer actually, was he there last night? Or is he's getting it secondhand or third hand? And then you start to realize that everything that's written is not fact. You know, it's generally people's opinion or someone's perspective of what's happening. So I really didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the good stuff that was said about me and to the bad stuff that was said about me. You tried to live up to your standard and what you thought was good or bad and evaluate yourself. And I will say the guys that are more important in how you play the game or how you improve or make mistakes are the guys that are in that locker room. It's so you look for them sometimes for advice or you look for them, but you don't really look in the paper. You don't watch TV for advice on how to fix my swing. You know, I haven't had a reporter yet that could help me fix my baseball side. And so that's the perspective that I had, and it helped me deal with the highs and lows that you get sometimes when you're feeling good and you read good things about you, and you think you start to believe what you read about you in the good. And the same is true. You would get really low when you would read the paper and there would be any sort of criticism and you thought it was unfair, and it would start to make you spiral down. I think the key to success on a daily basis is balancing your emotions. Don't get too high when you're doing real well. Don't get too low. And part of that is, how do you deal with, you know, praise and criticism? And I always internally was probably my hardest to judge, but I really valued my coach's opinion. My dad was my eyes to my swing for many years, and I would value the baseball sort of opinion a whole lot more than I did the outside opinion. And so I did it just by phasing it out.
Yeah, that balance can, I think, anybody doing any walk of life, that's good advice for sure. And sorry, I lied. I want to ask you one more thing about just more your fan interactions. You know, obviously, you've always been a fan favorite, and you went out of your way, it seemed, to sign autographs and spend time with people. I remember back in 95 on those road trips when you would sign for hours after the game. Yeah. And then your whole life, you were pretty open and accessible to that. How did you manage that, and how did you you know, do that and still kind of maintain balance in your life?
I don't know if I have a secret answer, but I know the first time someone asks you for your autograph and you're in the minor leagues, you almost want to ask somebody to ask you for your autograph. You're looking for that sort of attention or
validation.
Yeah. And so when that happens to you, it makes you feel good. But then the other side of that is that to see the reaction of the kid when he gets your autograph and he runs away and he's yelling to his mom or his dad, you know, I got it. And so if you've ever witnessed giving someone joy just by signing your name, you'd want to do it over and over again. So I always thought it was my way to communicate with the people in the stands. I never felt like I was a extrovert. I would always listen more than I would talk. Didn't want to be the big person at a party. I'd rather be watching other people and enjoy themselves and that sort of thing. So I never was an extrovert, but the autograph was a way to communicate. And I enjoyed, you know, making people happy that way. And I enjoyed the interaction with people. And many times conversations would come out of as a result of that. And it was my way of kind of bringing the fan that was in the stands down to the field. And sometimes literally I brought some little fans down to the field because they got crushed by some of the more professional autograph people, and they were, you know, in a position where they couldn't protect themselves. And I could see that from where I was. So many times I would just pick them up, bring them down the field.
Just honestly, Cal, thanks for taking some time. We just restarted our podcast after a few years of layoff. As you know, because podcast requests for your time keep coming into my office, podcasts are blowing up. This has been fun. I mean, we hope our perspective on spin is a four-letter word will be fun for PR professionals and media members alike to kind of listen and learn a thing or two.
So we talked about podcasts real quick, but the value of we didn't talk about podcasts. We talked about social media.
Yeah.
But the cool part about podcasts that I'm learning is that it's a little bit more time to express your opinion, examine an issue, go a little deeper, and then have that on demand. You know, the amount of information that's available to you as a result of these podcasts. My son is interested in podcasts.
Oh, cool.
You know, and I think it's just a perspective that he grew up with, but he likes the idea of examining things. We're a very analytical family.
Yes, you are.
And so we look at everything from every different angle. And many times we talk about that. And Ryan has had a unique set of experiences growing up in my shadow, and then some of the expectations that has occurred. And he has some thoughts. So, I mean, at some point you might have Ryan on your show.
I would love to have Ryan on the show. That would be great. No, I agree with you. It's a great way to take a deeper dive, to take a harder look at things. And the nice thing for the listener is, like, I just recently got way into pods, and you find things that are of interest to you, and you download them and you listen to them constantly in your car. So, no, good, great stuff all the way around. And I really appreciate you carving out some time to be on ours.
Yep, my pleasure. I had a good time.
Thanks, Junior. Thanks for listening to Spin is a Four-Letter Word. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe. Send us your feedback, too. We want this to be interesting for everybody. And give us a follow, @MaroonPR on Twitter and LinkedIn.